to mine.
The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Yeah, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Get Up, Stand Up, right here on Northumberland 89.7. The Jays have just tied it up in a home run from Edwin Encarnacion as he homered on a line drive to the left center field. It's all tied up now at the Rogers Center. It's 2-2. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. My guests in the studio are Rob Washburn. As always, this is your live weekly installment of Consider This. Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Rob, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Dave.
And welcome also to Paul Paganiello and Lydia Smith. They are representatives of the Coburg Ratepayers Association. I think I've got that correct. Am I? That's
Coburg Taxpayers.
Coburg Taxpayers Association. There you are.
Dave.
Welcome to the studio, folks.
Good evening.
Well, I'm very glad to have you guys in here. I know you've been into the studio once. You were here on Week in Review, I think, after the group formally announced its formation, if that's
right.
If that's accurate.
Yeah.
And welcome back to the show. I guess the first question I have is, why now? Why do we need a Coburg Taxpayers Association right now?
You can start.
Well, I don't know if I can answer why now. I can only answer why I thought of it. I guess it all happened for me when I went to do my first ever delegation to council on the Park Theater. And it astonished me that after they heard delegations from many people, they still voted 5-1 to spend $600,000 without a business plan.
As much as $600,000.
Yes. And that for me was the key, that they were willing to go and do that without a business plan. And when I talked to people the next day, it didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And so I thought they have power and we don't. And in order to make them listen, we really need to band together.
Obviously, yeah. You know, many voices and all of that. I mean, if standalone voices tend to not be listened to, but groups of people tend to be listened to a little more heartily. That's for sure by any government entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that concern obviously has gone away now, though, right? This concern over the Park Theater.
That particular one.
Okay.
But there are lots of others out there.
Well, why don't we talk to some of those if we can? Maybe give us an idea of what are some of the other issues that you folks are focusing on.
I'd be curious, Paul, what got you involved?
I've been a taxpayer advocate for 25 years now, and I started out in my old municipality up in Victoria County and went through very high tax increases during the recession in the 90s. And it became apparent to me that the municipal council of the day and the county council had just lost touch with reality. So I got involved locally, and then I got involved at the provincial level with 72 other municipal taxpayer groups. It was called back then the Ontario Taxpayers Coalition, and it was started by George Lanson's out in southwestern Ontario. And from there, I got involved with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Heard they were having a conference out in Alberta. Went out, checked out what it was all about. Very favorably impressed. And that whole group started over the GST debate.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 80s, early 90s. And from there, I spent quite a bit of time with the CTF and moved here 7 years ago. And, you know, we fell in love with Coburg. Mm-hmm. We lived out in the country all our lives, but came here. But the one thing I heard was, boy, you're moving to Cobourg, taxes are pretty high there. And it took my first tax bill to realize just how much more it was than I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
And during the term of the last council, I was away down south in February, and I submitted a budget proposal to council, and Stan Frost was the deputy mayor at the time. And I took 3-4 days to work on it, send it in, and basically it was ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Did it again this year. It was a very extensive submission I put in this year, and sat through the committee of the whole budget deliberations and realized that this is just over their heads. They were looking page by page. Nobody was asking any questions. They were just sort of nodding. And I know the amount of effort I put in to figure out just, you know, what was in the budget, where there were huge variances and things that people should be questioning. And that's what I devoted several days to. And it was obvious to me the council just didn't have that kind of time with everything else that's on their agenda. So when it came time to reviewing the budget this year, there were very little questions, very few questions asked, very little debate. And they would spend an inordinate amount of time dealing with nickel and dime stuff and not looking at the big stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, can you point to anything specific that you would refer to as big stuff?
Well, I mean, they just gloss over the community center and the fact that, you know, net loss of $815,000 a year, and it's growing every year.
Mm-hmm.
But they would get into great debate, and this came when it down to the community grants, and whether they would shave $2,000 or $3,000 off a request. I mean, small ticket items. And nobody sat back and said, hey, wait a minute. We're starting with this base, and everybody presumes, okay, we're looking at last year as the baseline, and we're going to increase by X percent. Nobody ever goes into the guts of the budget and says, what's in there to start with? They just look at the year-over-year increases.
Mm-hmm. So they're not looking at a line-by-line
no,
review.
No, no.
They're looking at an overall. They're saying, okay, well, this is what it was last year. We're looking at a 2% increase probably anyway, just for inflation.
And, I mean, the population is not growing. And, you know, about 21% of the population in Cobourg are people over age 65.
Well, so I think that population might be more than that,
it
actually.
It may be now, but, you know, that was the data from the 2011 census, mm-hmm. which is the most recent.
But isn't it, I mean, you talk about population increasing and therefore should taxes increase, but it's not really about the numbers. It's about assessment, is it not? And whether the amount of assessment, the new development, the amount of revenue that's coming in that would determine that, or
you keep hearing the argument, you need growth and you need to increase assessment so you can offset the cost of increase in government services year over year.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're finding, I mean, don't get me started, assessment.
That's why you're here, Paul.
I know. The whole tax system is flawed here.
Sure.
Because we try and deal with tax policy through market value assessment, the real estate value of somebody's home,
mm-hmm.
rather than set tax policy based on rates. And probably the one system I've always admired in around the world that I think has got it right is Israel. And their system is not based on market values. It's based on the square footage of the property and the house. And so the base remains stable unless you add to it. And the way they deal with tax policy is through the tax rate. So they'll, mm-hmm. they'll take an area of town and they'll say, this is a poorer area of town than
yep.
this area. And so we'll assign a lower tax rate here than over here.
Yeah. And also, too, I mean, it's a very antiquated and punitive system, right? Because there's not really a lot of tools that municipalities have to raise taxes. They've only got the one mechanism, whereas
yeah.
provincial governments and federal governments
mm-hmm.
have other tools. So it makes it a little bit more difficult for them. And then if there's downloading, that just makes it worse because now you're putting it all on local people.
And quite frankly, if you take the assessment system, if assessment in this municipality goes up, say, 5% overall, and put aside new growth, new housing, but if the just the values of the property go up 5%, they should, council should, in fact, lower the tax rate so it's revenue neutral. And then really say, okay, now we have to increase taxes by 2% or 3%. But I consider that if somebody, if it goes up 5% and they don't lower the tax rate accordingly, it's a stealth tax. It's a hidden tax. Mm-hmm. And so they can get away with assessment growth.
Well, and then they always blame it on MPAC at that
point.
Oh,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, that was always my biggest complaint with MPAC. It was is it took the responsibility out of these rate increases from the municipality and put it onto this third party, which, quite frankly, nobody has access to MPAC.
And, I mean, the cost of running that system? Horrendous, just absolutely horrendous.
So, can I throw in a little comment too?
Absolutely.
I just wanted to mention we had someone write into our website, CoburgTaxpayers.ca, and she's a business owner downtown, 3-story building. It's it's all done up to code, and she complains about how high her taxes are compared to some of her neighbors whose buildings are vacant or pretty much vacant because their tax rates are lower. So. It's like the people who are trying to grow this town are penalized, whereas the people that are just sitting back and not doing anything and contributing to the derelict downtown that we sometimes see, aren't being addressed.
No, that's a really good point. I want to address that issue myself, actually. We're going to take our first break of the hour. We will be right back. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat.
Northumberland 89.7 is proud to announce our second annual Radiothon fundraiser on Friday, November 6th and Saturday, November 7th. This year, we're looking to raise $15,000 that is needed for an emergency alert system as mandated by the CRTC and to upgrade our transmission equipment, which will give us even more reliable service during emergency conditions. Like all community stations, we rely in part on the generosity of our fans and listeners to help keep us on the air. So please join us the 6th and 7th of November for a chance to win hourly prizes and bid on some great silent auction merchandise. All this and a chance to help Northumberland 89.7 continue to be truly local radio.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905 373-1999.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air.
And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. Now, Lydia raised a really interesting point just before the break, and that's something that's kind of really, really bothered me since I moved here. And that's this idea that we have property owners in the downtown. We want to keep the downtown alive. We know the downtown's a vibrant part of our economic growth here in the community. And yet we have certain landlords downtown who shall remain nameless because everyone knows who they are, who have put no money into their buildings. They've allowed their buildings to basically crumble down around them. And because the space is unusable or uninhabitable, they get a tax break.
Yeah, 30% reduction.
Exactly. It's a 30% reduction. And yet someone who, as you mentioned earlier, has devoted time, has put money into their building. I mean, I can think of the Coburg Health Shop and the apartments above that have been really well renovated. There have been some really great work put in there, probably close to $1 million in that in all the work that's been done. And what was the benefit? The net benefit for that property owner was a tax increase.
Yeah.
So, it really isn't a fair system. Right now, we give people a break. And I think personally, if I were in charge of taxation or the budget, I would give no break to those people that, if the space is uninhabitable, guess what? That's your fault. It's not the rest of the ratepayers in the town of Coburg. They shouldn't be responsible for the fact that you've allowed your buildings to go and become dilapidated. Yes, you're a great property owner and you've paid property taxes on that little space that's habitable, but the other space, which could be garnering revenue, you could be earning money as a landlord. You could be renting those spaces out. You could maybe try some shops above the street. Who knows? But it won't be done as long as there's a tax break.
But you know what, Dave? That is the result of that 30% is because of provincial legislation, and that legislation has got to change.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it dates back several governments ago.
Mm-hmm.
And every subsequent government provincially has had the opportunity to make that change, and they haven't.
I'd like to speak to that as well, if I can. You asked earlier about, you know, why now for the Coburg Taxpayers Association. I think it's interesting that many other tax associations are forming as well. So, for instance, Port Hope formed in 2010. The Citizens Council of mm-hmm. Hamilton Township is new. And although our focus is municipal issues, there are some issues that do touch on the county and on the province. And we do hope to work with our sister associations on some of these issues as well going forward.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the Port Hope group because, I mean, they've essentially disappeared, have they not? I mean, they've pretty much dropped off the map.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for enlightening me, because my understanding is that since two of their members were elected to council, that they've sort of, you know, oh, well, now we're happy now, and they've
no,
moved on.
Can I actually speak to that?
Yes.
I went to the Port Hope council meeting last Tuesday. It was a thrill. First of all, all of council sits facing the audience. It's not like here where you have a horseshoe where they talk to each other and we just sit back like observers. But they also have a question period at the end. And so the mayor said, does council have any questions? Does the press have any questions? Do the public have any questions? And Jim Ronson from the Port Hope Ratepayers Association got up and said, we would like to thank this council for making the decision not to pave the Ruth Clark Activity Center parking lot. We know that it was an unpopular and difficult decision, mm-hmm. but we think it was the fiscally responsible one to do. And Robert Polutkin, who was a former member of the Ratepayers Association, is now a councillor. He was standing at the back trying to set up a camera so that they could get a video recording going, so that there is transparency, so that people that can't go out to the council meetings mm-hmm. can watch them. Not everybody has. I know that, you know, Cogeco does some of the council meetings, but not everyone has Cogeco TV.
Mm-hmm. Not enough, that's right.
So, you know, there you have a councillor actively working to, you know, have transparency happening mm-hmm. in the council chambers.
Is there not a proposal before this current council in Coburg, though, to broadcast a live stream?
There is, but let's get on with it. I mean, we can sit around and talk about it. It's probably, mm-hmm. I think, at most a $10,000 expense, and it's an expense well worth it. Unfortunately, Cogeco just covers the council meeting mm-hmm. and not committee of the whole, which is where the real debate and discussion takes place. And council is just basically rubber stamping what's decided.
Well, is the public allowed to access the committee of the whole meetings? I thought those were pretty much in-camera meetings.
They're wide open. They're
okay.
Wide open.
It's interesting, too, because I know I did an experiment for an article that I wrote for an academic paper. We did live blogging for almost two years, and we would have an audience of maybe three or four in that whole time. People didn't seem really interested in taking here in Coburg. Yeah, Scott Lamberton and myself and a couple of others did that kind of thing. And there just didn't seem to be a lot of interest in the public about tuning into these kinds of things. So why are you so keen on this?
I was just going to respond a bit differently, in that Dave and I were having a bit of a conversation before I came in today, and, you know, we were musing about why all these taxpayers groups are popping up now.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory that it's because of the aging population, and I think that's why people are showing up now. There are many people like us, our age, they're retired, they're dying to give back, they're dying to make a difference, and they have the skills and the experience and the time that they didn't have when perhaps they were working and, you know, having families growing up. So we have time to be the watchdog with the heart.
Well, that's interesting. Now, one of the things that you identify on your website as being a recent issue is the waiving of the development fees for the new medical arts building being proposed next to the hospital. Why were you against that?
Well, we recently made a submission to council, to committee of the whole, on their proposed community grants policy. And it was missing a whole bunch of things. We did a very random sample of about 10 municipalities nationally, mostly based in Ontario, to look at what their municipal grants policy was and to try and get best practices. And we found just a wealth of information doing that. And we developed a series of recommendations to council that said if you're going to get serious about developing a really meaningful community grants policy, this is what you should do and include. So there were issues of, you know, eligibility in terms of who should be eligible, who should be ineligible, grant criteria, and looking at the whole process in terms of just not rubber stamping something, but following up. If you give somebody a $5,000 grant for a specific issue, you want to make sure they spent it on that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they haven't, then they should return them whatever's left at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things which I realized as we were going through some of the other municipalities is they excluded hospitals. Hospitals were not, generally speaking, available or subject to the criteria for getting a community grant. The same thing with health clinics. I think here the situation is different in terms of our hospital in Northumberland. We're all very proud of it. It was a shock to me when I realized that the province generally does not fund medical equipment.
Mm-hmm.
They'll fund, you know, the mm-hmm. operations.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to things like replenishing yeah. or replacing heart monitors mm-hmm. or an MRI, it's up to the local community to raise that money.
Mm-hmm.
So the town has, for several years now, been donating $100,000 a year
mm-hmm.
To the hospital. Currently, I think it's for heart monitors. And look, we strongly support that. But if you now move out of that arena and get into what is essentially the construction of a private facility, largely housing doctors, in a nonprofit organization where the board of directors is unknown, there are a lot of unanswered questions in terms of land lease, building leases,
sure.
et cetera. That, from our study, would be ruled ineligible for a number of reasons.
Okay.
And if you start giving up $312,000 for that one facility, what are you going to give up on the other side in terms of
sure.
funding the hospital?
Sure.
You can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And $312,000, the bulk of it being development charges, is very significant.
Now, you mentioned, and I was going to ask you about this, about the community grants. I mean, your paper was pretty clear on what you thought should be the criteria. But I noticed when the art gallery was coming through for looking for their grant, we didn't hear from your organization. And I wonder why you didn't sort of step forward at that moment, since you had such strong views on the giving of money to community organizations.
We were just, I think, I don't even think we had launched at that point.
That's what I was going to speak to. Although we've quietly been working in the background for several months, our official media launch was September 15th, and a lot of work went into that, getting ready for that. And I just don't think that we were ready, or we would have had – privately we had a lot to say, but publicly we just weren't ready.
If they come forward in the future, or there was a budget in the future, how would your standard apply to what they were asking for?
There needs to be – one of the things we've recommended is that there needs to be a maximum limit per entity or group that comes forward asking for a grant. We've recommended a maximum of $15,000. In many other municipalities, it's far lower than that. We said $15,000. In the case of the hospital, because a hospital is a special thing,
mm-hmm.
we said in the case of the hospital, it should be based on a per capita calculation of, say, $6 per resident in town,
sure.
which is more than the $100,000 that they're getting right now. But everybody else should be capped at a maximum of $15,000. And as a town, in terms of the amount of money you're going to make available in community grants, you need to set an upper limit and say, this is it. So whether it's $200,000 or $150,000, the hospital is going to get $100,000, and whatever is left over is to be distributed amongst everybody else.
I just like to nip in here and stir the pot, not that I'm someone that does that. if I recall, the $75,000 to the Art Gallery of Northumberland came out of the Holdco Reserve. Is that right, Paul?
Yes, it did, I believe.
And that, and you know, I mean, Holdco is a whole other issue because we're, you know, the three main areas that I think we're really focusing on are one, inefficiency, two, accountability, and three, transparency. And, you know, the Holdco, the Town of Cobourg Holdings, which is a private company owned 99.9% by the Town of Cobourg, you know, the mayor, by virtue of his position, sits as the chair on that private company, which owns a number of subsidiaries, Lakefront Utilities being one. And so when funds are used from that, it kind of bypasses the whole purpose of council and budget as well. That's part of the problem, I
think. Well,
definitely skirts scrutiny, I've got to say that.
Well, it's one of Cobourg's biggest secrets. And best-kept secrets. Mm-hmm. You cannot get a financial statement out of Holdco.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been one published in years. So there's no annual report, no financial statement. We don't know what's going on, but we've been digging. And through going through some of the Ontario Energy Board audits, et cetera, and filings, we found that there was a shortfall of $737,000, where they made a mistake in terms of not remitting that amount of money to the distributor for Ontario, the hydro distributor for Ontario. And as a result, when it got caught in an audit, it had to be made up several years later. There's that whole
And that was passed on to the ratepayers
as
well.
That was passed on to, yes, to the hydro,
yes,
users. Then there was a situation where there was an overbilling of an industrial customer for 4 years before they had to refund them $1.4 million. That never came out public. And more importantly, Holdco was involved in a patent infringement on streetlights. That resulted in a lawsuit. We have no idea what the final outcome of that suit was. There was a legal agreement. But how much was paid out? Nobody mm-hmm. knows. And now we're stuck with these streetlights that they wanted to sell them. And they were conned into buying these things. And they came from a Chinese company.
All of this, you know, when you hear it, it sounds fantastic, almost unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. The more we look, the worse it gets, really. And you could probably do a whole show just on Holdco.
So the fact that we own, as you know, the town of Cobourg owns 99.9% of Holdco, which is a holding company for the electrical utility.
Mm-hmm.
And by virtue of that ownership, it means the citizens of this town own it, yet we cannot find out what is in the books.
No, absolutely.
It's time to peel back the data.
There's no public information on that, and that's something that needs to be addressed.
This comes down to the issue of accountability and transparency.
Exactly. On that note, we're going to take our second break of the hour. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. My guests in the studio are Cobourg's Taxpayers Association, Paul Pagnuolo and Lydia Smith, and, of course, Rob Washburn is here as well. This is your weekly installment of Consider This. Well, welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. That was a little sneak of Boz Skaggs' Dirty Lowdown right there. Joining me in the studio, Paul Pagnuolo and Lydia Smith of the Cobourg Taxpayers Association and Rob Washburn. Rob, you had a question.
Yeah, I did, Dave. It was recently announced that the Cobourg has hired an ombudsman for the town, a lawyer out of Peterborough. What difference do you think it's going to make to have an ombudsman and a complaints commissioner now available to citizens like yourselves?
Well, I'd much rather use the ombudsman provincially, whose powers have now been expanded to take in municipal issues.
We don't have an ombudsman right now, though.
It was Andre Morin.
I know. Well, we don't have one any longer.
No, but effective January 1st, we've got that new bill that was passed that expands the scope of the ombudsman to bring in municipalities. And that's where I would be spending the effort, I think, in terms of at the provincial level. And why do we need to hire one locally? We don't.
I believe it's provincially required now that every municipality have one.
Okay.
Well, there you go. So is that just another example of downloading from the province?
No, I think it was part of an accountability agenda that was brought in at the last election. And now you'll see every municipality is hiring a lawyer on retainer that they can call in when
But if you use the provincial ombudsman, there's no cost.
Yeah, I guess the other thing I'm curious about, too, is how many members do you have?
We've just started. We've got probably, I'm going to guess, about
I would say that in the last month, our membership has more than tripled, and we've had three new volunteers.
So what does that make a total of?
About 120, I think.
About 120?
Yeah.
I guess the other thing then becomes, you know, when you come forward and as a group, who are you really representing? I mean, you've got 120 people that you represent out of a population of 19,000.
Yeah.
So what does that mean in terms of the strength of your voice?
I think as the numbers grow, the voice becomes stronger. It becomes an opportunity for people who feel disenfranchised to get involved and feel that their voice is going to be heard. I mean, we're open to whatever complaints and concerns people have. We ask them to let us know. And, you know, if we can investigate what the issue is, we'll follow up on it.
But aren't two of your advisory committee members, though, former candidates in the municipal election, you being one of them? And
I was one, but I think that's it.
No, isn't Joe... I can't pronounce his last name.
Oh, you're right.
The real estate guy.
Johnny Percolides.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I apologize. He was also a candidate in the election.
Yeah.
I mean, couldn't somebody look at this and just go, you know, hey, this is just sour grapes. You guys are just coming back.
Can I speak to that? You know, I mean, people will look at us and see whatever it is they want to see, and they'll come at us from whatever opinion they really have. My whole purpose really in thinking about founding this association was just so that if I had something that I wanted to say, it wouldn't be just me saying it, that there would be people behind me. And Paul and I have had this discussion. I personally am not really out to represent the people of Coburg, if you will. I'm really out to speak about the things that I'm concerned about and have like-minded people behind me. And for those who feel they need that, you know, they're welcome to become supporters or to get involved with us. But I certainly am not setting myself up as, you know, hey, I'm the voice of you know, everyone in Coburg.
Well, we do have a caller online, so we're going to go to that caller
wonderful.
Right now. Go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on Rob's comment about how many are in the group. I'm not so sure at the very beginning. Like, I'm calling in reference to, like, the Port Hope group. Okay, they're still very active. Okay, and they were one of the reasons why basically we cleaned house here, because they brought up so many different things. At the very beginning, there was some very smart people on that Ratepayers Association who dug deep into a lot of the books and things that you're talking about and brought stuff up, and everybody started going, whoa, wait a second, we didn't know that. We didn't know this. All the various police surveys that they had wanting to get rid of the police, they're the ones who brought up the fact that the town's take on everything was completely wrong. This group that they hired to do it was wrong in all their facts and everything else. So it was a case of where they had some really good people who worked very hard at the beginning, and it built up and built up and built up to a point where everybody in town was you know, very aware of what was going on, and this is what happened with the election. It effectively, they said, okay, well, these people didn't want to let us know what was going on, so we want them out. I think as these groups uncover things that are going on, more and more people are going, oh, wait a second, I want to be a part of that, you know.
So they're creating a synergy is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah, the group, I'm just commenting on, again, on the way the Port Hope thing went. And eventually, people on the Port Hope Ratepayers Association actually got in on council. Like, they actually became councillors and whatnot, because they were known to really be diligent, really be smart on these numbers and everything. And you know, they knew what they were doing. And they proved it. And you're well aware of all these people more than just on election day.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for calling it.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Can, yep. I,
Can I comment about the Port Hope Ratepayers Association? I've enjoyed the time that I've spent with them and getting to know them. And before we formed our group, when Paul and I sat down and talked with Jim Ronson, one of the tools that they used that he said was successful was they held their own all candidates meeting. And I think Paul mentioned that when he ran in the last election at the all candidates meeting, no questions were asked about taxation.
No, that was at the budget submission. But also, you're right, at the all candidates meeting at the CCC, not one question came up on taxation. Now, the questions are all vetted, but not one came up.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting point.
What do you do when you get in and there are people that maybe disagree? For example, we were talking earlier about the art gallery. Now, there's lots of people around that support the art gallery, feel that it is a municipal responsibility. It's important that local governments support the arts community, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole host of arguments that are strong that could say we should do this. So then what happens to their voice and when people disagree with your stance, then what happens?
Well, I think if we look at the arts gallery, $75,000 a year, and the bulk of their funding is coming from the town. I have to ask the question, I think it's a fair question to ask, is that reasonable? Or should they be looking at bringing in more revenue from other sources? And why do they need to rely on the town?
But that's your position, and that's your state. You have a position on taxation, and you have a position on, where municipal dollars should go, and all that's really good. And I think that that's important, and it's great to have groups coming forward and saying these things. But in the wholeness of it, what happens when other groups, and how much do you really represent when you're just 125 people coming together before a council versus the rest of us?
Can I speak to that?
Absolutely.
I am not opposed to the arts, and I guess I just want to make the point that when I did my delegation about the Park Theater, that the reason I did my delegation was not because I was opposed to the Park Theater. I was not opposed to the Park Theater per se, and I was not opposed to the Park Theater group people because I know a lot of them and I have a lot of respect for them. What I was opposed to was the process. And what I mean by that is I can't believe that 5 out of 6 people voted to spend almost $600,000 of taxpayers' money without a business plan. What business person would go and buy some type of a business or open up some type of a business without investigating to see whether there's a market for it? Now, I know the arts can't be treated like a business. I understand that. But what I think is important, and one of the things that I think is really missing, is the opportunity to dialogue. And one of the points I made at that delegation was that I thought that the town really missed the boat. Instead of having an opportunity for all of us citizens, for the community, to talk about what's important to them, they just decided to do whatever they want without consulting people. And so I think by their behavior, they ended up polarizing two groups, which didn't need to be polarized. And I thought they actually did a lot of damage in their approach, frankly. And that's what I have an issue with, not with the arts, but or sports or any of the other multicultural things that are here, but the way that they go about it, they don't go about it in a business-like way. I don't have confidence in the way they take my money and spend it. They waste a lot of it, in my opinion.
And there are a lot of groups out there that are very deserving of grant money. And you can't satisfy all of them. So but at the same time, you've got to find an equitable way of distributing what available money is there to those who are worthy and deserving of it. And so the only way I think you can do that is by setting an upper limit per group, per request, per year. And as we went through the best practices, it became very obvious that most municipalities will not repeat grants if they're an annual ongoing event. They're prepared to do it for 2, maybe 3 years in some cases. If you're coming back for a third year, it's a reduced amount that the municipality will grant every year. But if you're looking at primary funding coming from the town through community grants, best practices from what we looked at, says that's not going to happen.
All right. On that note, we're going to take our final break of the evening. Folks, we will be right back. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. This is Canada's only holistic political chat.
Seven.
And welcome back to The Drive Time as we get ready to wrap up our hour here with Paul Pagnuala and Lydia Smith of the Coburg Taxpayers Association. Rob Washburn is in the studio with us as well. One of the issues you raised during the break here was the number of people that are on the sunshine list. That's the people who make over $100,000 a year. You raised some interesting questions about transparency on that particular issue, but that's something you're not going to get any information on because you're talking about individuals, you're talking about specific salaries for individuals, and we know that this council and every other municipal government across the country isn't willing to discuss issues that delve into the personal nature or the salary structure for staff. It's one of those things they don't want to talk about.
No, but...
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, that's one thing about the Sunshine List, but surely they can talk to us and explain to us why is it that in the last 4 years, although the population of the town hasn't really grown, that we've gone from 266 town staff to 325. Surely they can talk about that and explain why we need so many more people to do the same, you know, amount of work.
That's a 21% increase. Now, in fairness... that's an increase of 16 full-time staff, 14 part-time staff, and 27 seasonal.
But that's, were we that understaffed? Is that the concern? We were understaffed?
I mean, come on. Seasonal staff has increased by 54%, 11% increase in full-time, and 19% increase in part-time.
So let me ask you this. You guys have lots of good questions, and you've raised a lot of really important issues and some serious issues that need to be addressed by council. If you get the answers, are you prepared to accept them?
If they're reasonable answers, yes.
Well, what makes a reasonable answer then?
One that is fully justified. And that they can say this is absolutely necessary.
In whose mind is justified? In yours?
I think in ours, yes.
So if it's justified in your mind, then you'll pack up and go away and find another issue to come back on.
There'll always be issues out there, Bob, at the municipal level. We're never going to pack up our tent and go away. We're here to stay as a permanent fixture.
Now, one of the things that happened over in Port Hope was that the ratepayers group got so active and there was so much animosity between the council and the group that it froze a lot of the agenda, took up a lot of time of the councillors, and it became really hard to govern. How far are you prepared to go in terms of your advocacy? Are you prepared to go as far as they did in terms of freezing the council out? Or are you prepared to, if they give you an opportunity to speak and get your ideas out, is that going to be sufficient?
Well, I'd like to answer that question, please, Paul. I think that the best way to really show and explain what we're about is to go back to the municipal grants policy. I'm not sure people realize what we really did, but what we put together was using all the resources that we have, the skills and experience that we have, we put together a 15-page report, to help council to perhaps give them some ideas that they consider to choose from best practices that they could perhaps look at and use in our own town if they think that it would serve. I personally am not about going after these people. I'm a collaborative person. I want to work with people and I want to help people. And I feel as if we don't, maybe they're starting to listen, but I don't really feel that they listened in the past. And I think all I really want is for them to listen and consider some of the business-like ideas we have that may help them.
Well, you know, you raised a really good point there, because a lot of the troubles you have with the Sunshine List, for instance, and the increase in staffing, that happened with the previous council. So is it fair to say then that, you know, we haven't really given this council enough time to try and figure out where the inequities are, where the problems are? I mean, they've been in office now, what, since December.
Three of them have.
Yeah.
Well, I realize that. But what I'm saying is that we've got a different council now. We seem to have a council that's motivated more by accountability. I know that right now the deputy mayor is undergoing a major review of operations. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why the operations report wasn't released for the CEO, CAO. I know that the councillors that are there now, Councillor Rickerby, for instance, Deb McCarthy, the deputy mayor, they're all saying, look, we were brought in for accountability. We want accountability. So they're doing this operational review. And this is an operational review that they're not bringing in a consultant for. They're actually going through the numbers together. I know that that John Henderson is doing some really incredible work trying to parse through all of the sort of hidden things that have gone on. And and they're definitely looking at ways that they can make it a more accountable, more functionable, and also to determine whether or not the staffing levels need to be where they are. So isn't it reasonable then, since the majority of residents here voted for these folks, to give them at least a year, maybe a year and a half
before
we come out and say, this isn't happening and we're not happy with this?
But what we want to do is offer them a different perspective, do some of the legwork that perhaps they themselves don't have time to do or the staff haven't thought of.
So yours isn't an adversarial organization then? It's not about saying, you guys have wasted so much money.
No. I'd rather work with them collaboratively. And if we take a look at what happened with the municipal grants policy and our recommendation to them, they put on hold the one that they had so they could study ours.
Right.
And what we did, I like to think, is what we did is what a consultant would have done, except we didn't charge them. And so here is a different perspective, a different look based on best practices. And I think we should always be looking at trying to achieve best practices in municipal government.
Well, on that note, folks, unfortunately, we've run out of time. We're going to bring it to a wrap here. I'm Dave Glover, the host of The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. My guest has been Paul Pagnuella and Lydia Smith of the Coburg Taxpayers Association. Rob Washburn, as always, doing his yeoman service. And I never did thank you for filling in for me the day I had that debate, by the way. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And thanks for tuning in to Canada's only holistic political chat. This is The Drive Time. This is where the information comes to be told, folks. I'm Dave Glover. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow as well, so thanks again.